Hi friends, welcome to Spilling the Beans podcast, where we spill the beans on all things intuitive eating, health at every size, body acceptance, and gentle nutrition. I'm your host and registered dietitian, Amanda Lambrix, and you may know me as @spillingthebeans_nutrition on Instagram and Facebook. Go ahead, get comfortable, grab a snack, and let's get started spilling the beans. Hello, we are already on episode 18 of the Spilling the Beans podcast, which is both hard for me to believe and also not hard for me to believe. And I think the reason it's not hard for me to believe is I've learned that there's a lot more work involved with podcasts than I had previously realized, especially when you're doing all the editing and all the back-end work by yourself. But it's also been incredibly rewarding, so it's both hard to believe and also not hard to believe. But I'm already starting to plan ahead for season 2 because I will keep season 1 to just 20 episodes. I honestly have no idea what the norm is for an average season length, but that kind of felt like a good even number to me. And while I'm planning for the next season, please do not hesitate to ever send in any topic ideas or guest suggestions. I have a few ideas for topics and guests in mind, but feedback is always welcomed. Another announcement, if I'm remembering correctly from when I originally edited this podcast a couple weeks ago, I think I referred to having an episode on Health at Every Size, or HAES, with dietitian Haley Goodrich. That was originally what was in the plan, but unfortunately, due to some scheduling conflicts, we had to push that episode to the next season, which is totally fine. We can focus more on intuitive eating for this season and then dive more into that in the next season. So originally that episode was going to be episode 18 and today's episode was going to be episode 20. However, like I said, we moved that back, but I didn't want you to be confused and then start looking through my archive and wondering where the heck that episode is. But in place of that episode, since I needed to add one more to the agenda, you will be stuck with another solo episode with me. I hope you're okay with that. It's going to be a question and answer style episode, a little bit more laid back, maybe some reflection on my first season of podcasting and anything that has come to mind or that I've learned. But more importantly, I'd like to be able to answer some of your common questions or not so common questions. So to get a jump start on getting a bank of questions, please send your questions to me either on Instagram, which is spillingthebeans_nutrition. I will give you a little bit of a hint. I'm going to be changing and rebranding some of my social media soon to make it a little bit more specific to the types of clients I'm trying to attract. But for now, that's where you can find me. Everything else with my business will stay the same. So it's still going to be Spilling the Beans, but I am going to be changing the handle of my Instagram. So anyways, for now, you can still reach me on that handle on my Instagram, or you can always shoot me an email at hello@spillingthebeansnutrition.com. So stay tuned for that episode because I also am hoping to do some sort of giveaway on that episode to thank you for bearing with me for my first season and any technical errors I've had along the way. It's been fun for me to connect with people who listen to my podcast and get feedback from you. It's been fun for me to connect with therapists and dietitians on the show, and I want to thank you for taking the time to support me. Also, if I'm remembering correctly, I did a giveaway for a $20 Starbucks gift card on my first episode, so I feel like we're coming full circle by incorporating that as well. All right, back into the logistics of today's episode. In episode 18 of our podcast, we're covering weight bias and healthcare. I say that very lightly and like joyful, but it's a very serious topic. I am chatting with Lori Brown, who's a registered dietitian, about this topic, and we're going to be talking about weight bias and what it is, examples of weight bias in healthcare, how weight stigma can actually worsen our health, and how Lori has experienced weight bias in the healthcare setting firsthand. This was really an eye-opening conversation for me, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. As far as a little background on our guest, Lori Brown has been working as a registered dietitian for over 15 years, and in 2014, she finally stepped into her first eating disorder dietitian position in Tennessee, where she resides. And you'll hear her talk a little bit about about her journey in the episode. More recently, she went through the process to become a certified intuitive eating counselor and was the second professional to obtain the certification in Middle Tennessee, which is pretty awesome. Lori offers a no-nonsense approach to change, and she's a radical anti-diet dietitian on a mission to come alongside people and help them ditch diet mentality. All right, so today we have dietitian Lori Brown with us to have a discussion about a variety of topics. How are you doing today, Lori?
I'm good, thank you.
So I am so excited to talk to you. We've been emailing back and forth, kind of trying to find some different themes we might be interested in talking about. But before we get into that, can you tell my listeners a little bit about yourself professionally and whatever you care to share personally?
Sure. So I have been in the field of nutrition for 20 years, and that makes me smile because I think there's just all these eclectic and fun stories. And I have been focusing in eating disorders, I think, for just about 6 years and loving that path. I live in the Nashville area, so it's a really fun area to be connected. I think there's a great group of eating disorder dietitians. Personally, one fun fact, when I am not working as a dietitian, I actually teach creative movement. I never anticipated doing that. So my first plan for my life was like music and going to go to Broadway. And I really put it on the back burner, but I think only in the Nashville area, you can do like dietitian part-time, work in, you know, movement, dance part-time. So that has been an unexpected, I guess, outlet for me for, it's going on 10 years that I've been back into a studio. I am a mom. I think it informs pretty much every day decision to so much of my life. I have two spicy, sweet daughters. I love stories. I think I'm a storyteller by nature, and we are passionate dog people. I think you have a dog too.
I do.
Yes. So we are bonded over our love of dogs.
So I love that you have a lot more experience in dietetics than I do. I'm going on, I think this will be coming up on my fifth year as a dietitian. So I imagine you've seen a lot of different trends in the field of dietetics and also just in this diet culture that we live in. What are some things that you've noticed that have changed over the course of your career, whether that's the philosophies that you practice by or just overall the trends in nutrition?
Oh, I think that's an interesting question, and I might flip it upside down because I wish I could say that there are radical changes. And of course, like with research, there's been slight shifts, but I would argue sadly that a lot of things have not changed. And granted, I own the lens that I wear in terms of being, however you phrase it, like anti-diet or health at every size. There's some similarities, and we can discuss the nuance if we decide to do that. But sadly, what has not really changed, and what is interesting, and I can talk about, particularly for clients who are like my age bracket, you know, the 40 plus crowd, we can call it different names, but it isn't changing. Just the style in terms of wanting to change our body, but just using different programs or different diets or wellness or quote unquote lifestyle. And ultimately, to borrow, I just love how Evelyn Tribole uses this language, but it's collecting suffering. And I think that's what's really stood out to me with the amount of time that I've been in this industry is all the different ways that we are attributing, sadly, to suffering.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really profound. And I like what you said about how, you know, maybe the trends have changed as far as what people are following with diets. For example, keto diet seems to be hanging around the last couple of years. But then I remember growing up, it was very much this low fat type of diet. But what you mentioned reigns true, that it's all comes down to the same thing. People have this deep dissatisfaction for their bodies. And I think it's important, like you said, to acknowledge the harm that our field has actually done in contributing to some of this.
Absolutely. Dietetics, for sure. I hope, and it seems like there's some programs that are becoming a bit more progressive, trying to step into that. But let's be honest, there's still some dichotomous viewpoints in terms of what are we going to do with weight? But then collectively, health, the healthcare industry, oh boy, there's just so much weight stigmatism, so many assumptions, and I would say so much harm that's done in the name of health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's something I think we'll definitely dive into in this episode because, gosh, I don't even know where to start. There's so much we could talk about on that subject. In regards to your career as a dietitian, did you start out practicing as what we might call a non-diet dietitian?
Well, no, but then a little bit yes. So I think context is important. My first job, well, let me rewind. I went to school. I'm natively from Michigan, and that's not really a state that is like a hot spot for eating disorder treatment. There are a couple of places you can go, but not where I was living. And when I was done with school, I had a baby. So I just didn't have the freedom to just, you know, move wherever the winds carried me. I was a mom. And as I said, that's been very informative to the decisions that I have. So I actually changed my major to become a dietitian, absolutely with this passion and desire to work in eating disorders, but that just didn't happen right away, not where I was living. So my first job was in dialysis, actually, which is not at all like a health at every size. In back in the day when I was, you know, it was all paper and we looked up our research in periodicals. This is the truth. It was just such different times. And as I have language now for health at every size and knowing the great leaders, they were doing the work. But again, I wasn't connected. I wasn't even on the internet or social media. That was not a thing when I got started. So I worked in dialysis. It wasn't severely weight centric, but let me tell you a story that really changed my life. First of all, I learned weeks that no one really cared what I had to say at all, to the degree that one person ripped up their nutrition. You essentially go around, in case our listeners aren't familiar with what the dietitian does. There's a lot of responsibilities. I loved it, actually. It was very clinically challenging and a great place to learn. But what you do is you're monitoring a lot of labs and then you're reviewing them with your clients or your patients, essentially kind of like a report card. And I literally had a patient rip it up in my face.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. It was wonderful because it really helped me realize they really don't care if I'm just coming out as like an expert in my lab coat to be like, let's talk about your nutrition report card. They don't care. And it immediately forced me to get more relational. Like, hey, how's your grandchild? Or tell me about, I'm thinking of two people in particular. So this one had a grandson that I still remember that was in T-ball. And we talked about it all the time. Or tell me about the vacation that you took last week. And that became the backbone of how I practiced in a dialysis unit. And it was changing for me, this idea of being relational first, clinical second. And so I coined the phrase, like, I am Patch Adams around here. I am just trying to do the best that I can. But then, second of all, I had a doctor when we were in doing rounds at a clinic. When our patient left, the doctor looked at us and just said, he's lying. It made such an impact on me because I recognized I can't work from that lens, assuming that my patients are lying. Because first of all, if they are, that's still our role to figure out why and how we can be supportive. And second of all, that just feels really crummy to just write like non-compliant, they're lying, and move on with my day. So I realized before this all had language, yeah, I look at things differently. And I think that stuck with me pretty much throughout all the different types of jobs that I had before I got into eating disorders.
Mm-hmm. There's so much I want to talk about there. I think, first of all, it's really cool that you had a different reaction than I think most people would when that patient ripped up the information that you were giving them, right? Because you could have gone back to your office and if you had other dietitian colleagues, you could have vented and said, can you believe that? I can't believe they would do that. Like, they are non-compliant. They don't care. You know, the things that we often hear, sadly enough. But you actually learned from that and realized, okay, if I'm just talking down to them or just giving them the information without finding out more about who they are as a person, it's not going to be particularly effective. So I love that because I think sometimes, at least what I found when I worked clinical the first about year and a half of my career as a dietitian, I sometimes felt uncomfortable going into people's rooms and giving them the generic handout just because I had to, because they had come up on my system. And I felt like I was just giving this information to check off a box, but I didn't have the amount of time that I needed to chat with them. So I love the approach that you've now taken, and it sounds like you've been doing this for a long time and it's helped inform your quality of care. And then the other thing I liked about what you said is how it really impacted you hearing a physician or another person in the healthcare team talk negatively about a patient when they weren't around. I've certainly been in that same situation. Going back again to my clinical experience, I remember there was a gal who lived in a larger body, and when we would get to our rounds, some of the things that nurses and even social workers as a part of our team would comment about this patient, it just made me feel so gross inside. And it made me wonder if how the way they're talking about them behind their back would also be impacting how they're actually treating them when they are face to face with that person.
Yes. And I certainly don't want to act like my ego's never gotten in the way or that I haven't, you know, vented mm-hmm. or gotten my feelings hurt. I definitely have a real sensitive side. And today still, you know, in supervision, I have to keep myself in check. But they were very profound experiences to me. You know, the fact that I remember them and they were kind of a pivot, I'm grateful because I think that they put me on a trajectory of like relational. Before there were tools and trainings on like motivational interviewing, or now I have even more therapeutic tools, I suppose, but it was impactful. Absolutely.
And also, gosh, I think we could have a whole discussion on the use of the term non-compliant when describing a patient. We see it all the time. I remember reading it all the time in chart notes. And I actually, throughout my whole job and my internship working in clinical, I don't think I ever questioned the term noncompliance until I started working more in this space and listening to people's experiences, that I started to wonder, why do we use the term noncompliance? What are your thoughts on that?
I agree. And I'd love to look back. I probably have to think really critically, did I write that down? Certainly in my training, I know it was a big part of it. And gosh, if we did an intense search, was it ever in my early notes? I honestly don't know. I'd have to give a lot of thought, but just for the sake of our conversation, we are trained, at least I was heavily trained with that language. I don't know if it's because we want to fix things and it's easier to put that label on. But there's so much blame on the person. Are we uncomfortable with sitting and being curious and leaving open spaces? I think part of my growth, just getting more mature in life. And again, I can attribute a lot to this field that I work. I think I'm fortunate that I'm allowed to sit in some of those spaces. So I don't know that I have one particular answer in terms of why we're so quick to put that label on like non-compliant, but it seems very blaming and the opposite of compassionate. And when I think about how I want to show up with people and what feels true to me, I struggle, feel good, quote unquote, not that it's about our feelings, but it doesn't feel true if I can't believe my clients, and non-compliant doesn't feel compassionate or that I'm really believing them.
Yeah. And I think it goes back to, for example, when I've had clients, and I've noticed this in my internship, and I'm certainly not innocent myself because I'm sure I've said things over the course of my career early on, particularly that I wouldn't be proud to admit now, but I'd be watching one of my preceptors, for example, and we would be going over, say, what the client had eaten, and we would be doing diabetes education. And then sometimes it would be like, as soon as the person left the room, the dietitian or whoever it might say, I don't think that that's actually true based on their anthropometrics and perhaps their blood sugar levels. And again, it's looking back, it's like, ooh, that's not a good feeling when you have this client who is willingly coming in and chatting with you and you're not willing to take what they're saying for what it really is.
Yes, and well, I think we'll unfold it more, but part of my story now, living all these years, is twofold. First of all, knowing what that feels like when you're in that chair, when you're the recipient of someone not listening to you, that feels really, really crummy. But if we go back to the point that I was making, you know, early in my career, is it's really a fork in the road. And part of our role when we are a clinician is staying curious. So let's say the person is lying. Well, so what? How can we create safety and stay curious so that we can be supportive to them and work on solutions? Or maybe they're telling the truth. You know, like maybe they're telling the truth and there's something else going on. We both know with all the research now and the approach that we take, it's just so chemistry in the body is so amazing. It's so complex. So it really could be that they're telling the truth as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of it, and we'll certainly break this down a little bit, but it can come back to weight bias that's quite prevalent in healthcare. And so, for example, if you see someone in a larger body and if they were to do a diet recall with you, in other words, telling you what they ate in the last 24 hours, and it didn't map up with the idea that you had in your head about what a person in that particular body size would eat, then you don't believe them. Or, and also that just goes back to the kind of care that you're giving that person. Have you noticed instances where your clients or you yourself have experienced weight bias in the healthcare system?
Absolutely. So I've been doing this line of work to where the stories are just heartbreaking, you know, just so sad. I think weight bias, first of all, if we unpack that, what does weight bias mean? Because I think that there can be some confusion or sometimes some pushback. So, you know, simply, I think it's just negative attitudes, beliefs, or assumptions towards people who live in non-conforming bodies. It's kind of the way that I would explain it. And that can go on any side of the, my daughter has a friend who lives in a very, very small body. And she's just expressed how she gets upset if people, you know, tease her like, do you ever eat anything? Are you sick? Mm-hmm. And that gets exasperating to her. So I want to hold space and kindness and not make it assumptions that it's just for one body type. But absolutely, I would say when I am sitting with clients, there is just seemingly a disproportionate amount of pain and suffering for those who are quote unquote overweight or in larger bodies. And it is just, it can seem unreal. You know, you'll be sitting with them and they'll be telling you these stories. And I think sometimes what's heartbreaking to me is that's become normative to them to be treated that way. You're listening to the assumptions that are made. And part of the work, I think, sometimes is role modeling, like, oh my gosh, the doctor said what or did what? In helping them unpack, like, that's not okay. That's an assumption or that's discriminatory. But that's heartbreaking when we think about people being treated simply because their body size. Or, you know, I think we've all heard stories where maybe someone's seeking fertility treatment or some type of surgery and they're told that they have to lose weight first. And so they feel a lot of pressure. I mean, there's just so many examples where discrimination happens or assumptions are made and it's unreal. So I've always believed people and had high levels of compassion. But I think what's been interesting for me is that I had a really stable weight that was quote unquote normal. If we're just going to talk about the BMI, now we all know BMI is bogus and not really accurate, but just for a context, in the recent past, my weight has shifted and now I'm quote unquote overweight according to my BMI. And what's been really shocking and flabbergasting for me as a human, and I think also for my providers who have been my providers for some time, is our relationship because they are quite concerned and I would say have treated me with a lot of weight bias and a ridiculous treatment. And I have pushed back and it has been quite an experience. And it hasn't just happened once. It's happened multiple times to me.
Wow. I think too, you know, I'm someone who I can acknowledge that I live in a thin body and have a multitude of privileges. And I've never experienced the type of treatment that I hear some of my clients speak of, or the stories I hear. You know, I listened to Christy Harrison's podcast, and she is really good about getting a diverse number of people on there who can speak to their experiences. And I've never had treatment like that. The only thing I can think of that maybe has been overlooked due to perhaps living in a smaller body, which of course is quite different than the treatment that you might get in a larger body. But I know when I was younger and I struggled more with disordered eating, it often would get overlooked because I was a runner. And so when I didn't have a period, it was easy just to put me on birth control because I was a runner. Mm-hmm. That was normal for girls who are runners and tall and thin. And then also I would pass out a lot. And that was just often attributed because I was a runner. I had a low blood pressure and a low heart rate, and that was just normal. And of course, now learning more about eating disorders, particularly anorexia nervosa, and hearing about different things that can happen when you have these lower heart rates and lower blood pressure, it's been interesting just to see how a number of people can be overlooked in the healthcare system. And I wish I had an answer to how things could change in the healthcare system. Certainly the 10-minute appointments don't do a lot of justice, but that's the only experience I can think of. So I can imagine this has been quite jarring for you personally to go from not having that type of treatment to now, as our bodies naturally change as we get older, now you're seeing firsthand how you're being treated differently.
Absolutely. And I think what's been profound to me, like, I am wrapping up a master's degree, a master's of education with an emphasis in eating disorder. I work in this field, which provides me with a lot of, I think, resilience. I had this on fire, like, radical, amazing, beautiful college professor that just put my feet on the right track. So I would argue I have 20 years of pretty healthy body image, relationship with food. That's a pretty strong foundation. Excellent social network and support with my friends, body positive community. So there's a lot. I'm providing this context to say there's a lot that goes into who I am, not to mention the type of research that I read, again, for grad school to stay current, because as dietitians, we have to do a lot of continuing education. Mine's very focused in eating disorders. Okay, so I imagine me walking into the doctor's office to get my pelvic exam and being interrogated about breakfast and calories and carbohydrates and what type of almond milk. Like, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, what does my vagina and my hormones have to do with carbs? We got to back the train up. But most people don't have the type of experience I do, nor should they have to. So I think what's been perplexing and, like, set my world on fire with this whole idea of health at every size, this is a problem. I've always believed it's a problem, but it's one thing when, like, you hear about it and another thing when you experience it. And it's been a new level of grieving for me, because I, as Lori Brown, can go in there and stand up for myself and push back. But I know a lot of people that maybe don't have that tools. You shouldn't have to have a master's degree and work in eating disorders to navigate through this thing called healthcare. That's ridiculous. And so I think I have just been trying to process, like you're saying, what are the answers? What are the solutions? And oh my word, this runs deeper and is just very problematic. If they're going to treat me, a Caucasian educated female who they know is a dietitian, like, if they're going to treat me that way for having a BMI that's quote unquote at risk now, oh God help us, how are they treating other people?
That's such a good point and really gives you something to think about. Gosh, I don't even know if I want to know the answer. And I think something I heard a couple years ago, and I can't remember who said it, but the quote was something along the lines of, our medical system prescribes the types of things that we diagnose as eating disorders for people in larger bodies. And that really got me thinking about how normalized this dieting has become. But if you have a certain type of body, then it's okay if we call it an eating disorder. And I think that speaks volumes.
Absolutely. Dr. Gaudiani, who we probably all mm-hmm. know, Love and Respect in her book kind of calls doctors out. And I remember the first time I read it, I thought, ooh, it's pretty powerful. But she may have a point. You know, are healthcare providers causing and normalizing eating disorders? Because people listen to their doctors. Those are to be a trusted source, or providers, you know, not just doctors, but to their providers. That's to be a safe place. And if you're going there and you're essentially being prescribed disordered eating patterns, you know, intermittent fasting, keto, 1200 calories, whatever in the world, those things are ultimately going to jack up your metabolism, promote inflammation, and just dysregulate your relationship with food, make you grumpy, cause you to distrust your body. Like, yikes, that's not ethical. It's not ethical, but yet it's normative. And that is alarming. I think that's what's alarming to me is how normative it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think too, just the number of things that we hold weight for weight loss in, no pun intended. But for example, I've had clients tell me that they'll go in and they've really been struggling with migraines. And I don't know if it's just that the doctor doesn't know where to go with the client and they've tried a lot of different things. And so it's just very easy and what I would argue lazy healthcare to tell them to lose weight. But I mean, even things like a migraine, you hear of prescribing weight loss, or you hear stories about where people come in and they just have a common cold. And whereas someone in my body size would get a full workup and we'd try to figure out what it is, someone in a larger body may leave there with a diet plan. And that's really sad.
I absolutely agree. And I think that that's what's shifted in my lived experience. And again, I would hear about this with my clients and think, whoo, how can we prepare you to go to the doctor? Do we need to find a new doctor? Do we need to have a written plan? But it's been like, okay, game on for me. And you know, part of my work probably will be finding a new doctor, but part of it was, you know, I'm like, I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to accept this treatment. Absolutely not. And so there is this mutual, you know, like, no, I'm not going to a weight loss clinic. Are you kidding me? You're sending me a pamphlet for bariatric surgery? Like it was, I didn't know if I should laugh, but I'll be darned. I'm going to go back and explain to this doctor, have you lost your mind? You know, like, so I felt the need to go back, but I think the doctor felt mutually horrified that I wouldn't listen.
Oh my goodness. So when you were labeled quote unquote at risk based on our flawed BMI system, you were sent a pamphlet on a bariatric clinic?
I absolutely was. Oh my gosh. I mean, it's unreal. And it made me realize, oh my gosh. Now, here's the thing, just so we can have a richer context. Of course, I've done like the normal lab routine, like everything's normal. My thyroid is normal. My cholesterol is normal. Not that that would really matter for this level of treatment, but like I'm quote unquote healthy. My blood pressure is fine. And I hold a lot of space to say, oh, you had, you know, 20 years of your life, your weight's been normal. Could this be a symptom? Sure. Let's talk holistically. Let's talk about your sleep. Let's talk about the trauma that you've gone through. Let's talk about your stress. I'm game on to have like a holistic evaluation and maybe even consider weight as like a symptom. But what I'm not going to talk about is like the shaming, like you really need to have an intensive lifestyle modification and slip in this bariatric surgery. It's so blaming and filled with assumptions because nothing's changed. Like literally nothing's changed with my eating. And my movement's about as good as it's going to get for a single mom in grad school. And I've been pretty unapologetic about that and push back like, no, I will not eat 1200 calories mm-hmm. a day. That's ridiculous. No. So I think they've heard me, but just I bet, you know, it'd be delightfully funny is if my chart said non-compliant, like this wild woman is non-compliant.
Oh, sometimes I wonder what my chart says. And I certainly haven't been as much of an advocate for myself as you are. And it kind of brings me back to what you had said earlier, too. You're someone who has a great wealth of knowledge as far as what people are going through when they go to a doctor. And so having experienced it firsthand, you perhaps have more in your toolkit to handle it, although I would argue it doesn't make it any less traumatizing to have those experiences. But like you said, you shouldn't have to have a master's degree and 20 years of experience to know how to address these issues or to have to address them, period.
Correct. And I think that's where I'm at right now. This is also new to me in terms of just me as a human trying to figure out, like, first of all, how am I going to navigate the doctor just as a human? And then how does this translate to me as a quote unquote health at every size advocate? Because I always have been, but I'm going to admit this has sort of changed my perspective. It's one thing to have knowledge of something and to practice it, but it feels different to me now that this has happened to me. And I don't know how else to phrase it other than it just feels different to me. It's personal. I'm protective. I'm just in a different space with this whole health at every size message. Of course, I've always believed it, but it is absolutely the backbone. And I'm quite unapologetic about it now. I don't have the answers. Like, what is it going to mean for me in the future? I don't know. What are the solutions of how we can do better? Quote unquote, I don't know, but absolutely change is needed. It's propelled me to a space of like, whew, more reflection. Yes, more needs to be done. And I wish I had the answers. I don't today, but I'm willing to share my story because I think it just highlights how deep this runs.
Mm-hmm. And I think two, that can also perpetuate this weight stigma, which can have a number of impacts on us, one of which could mean that we're less likely to seek out healthcare because of the shame that we're led to feel after we leave a doctor's office.
Yeah, I have heard that. Like, of course, statistically, you know, there are statistics that talk about people, that's their lived experience, which makes sense. Again, like if you're being discriminated against, you're probably not going to want to go back. There's the bully treatment where you have to kind of jump through hoops just to get the treatment that you need and deserve. And we know people in larger bodies tend to avoid going to the doctor, which can be problematic because they may then not get preventative care. And so then their outcomes may not be as advantageous as if they were screened and properly cared for. Some of my clients, like I'm thinking of a couple right now, part of our work is working with a therapist, of course, but working through the trauma of healthcare treatment, what doctors have said, just some horrible, careless statements that doctors have said that are very blaming, and trying to work up to going to a new care provider. Could it be possible to have a trusting relationship with a doctor again? They logically know they need to do things like a pelvic exam, getting their labs drawn. They want to, but they're terrified. They're terrified of the shame because of how horrible it's been. And I know for me, again, I was able to reframe it pretty quickly, but absolutely when I walked out of my last exam, I wasn't like, oh, that was fun. I want to go back and hang out there. I was like rolling my eyes like, are you kidding me? What? It felt like a complete waste of my time and money. And in this particular season of my life, those are valuable resources. I am limited on both. So absolutely not motivating to go back.
Yeah. And you mentioned you're willing to discuss in your own situation that a weight change for you could mean some sort of symptom of a bigger or a different problem, but that's not what's being explored. And it reminds me of, I had heard a story a couple months ago. I think I saw a tweet about how this girl had been getting all these different compliments about how she had lost all of this weight and then come to find out she had an advanced stage of cancer. And so it's like we're willing to compliment people at any cost for weight loss. And that's just one example of how we know that how we value weight isn't just about health, although that's what people try to assert, that it's about being healthy, when clearly I imagine someone who has cancer and lost weight because of cancer, they're not in a healthy state.
Oh my gosh, that is devastating. I remember one of my first jobs in eating disorder, I actually worked on paper. It was supposed to be a binge eating disorder, but it was not, because people and diagnoses, like, we don't fit in boxes. That's just not the way that it works. But at that time, sadly, my marriage was totally dismantling. It was a horrible time in my life. So again, contextually, as far as how I presented, most of my life I've been at a very stable weight. But at that time, I guess maybe just from stress, I was rapidly losing weight. And what was sad is that I was getting a lot of compliments about my weight, both from like just people. And then I remember clients, you know, just part of where they were at, maybe in their own healing, they were drawn to my body size because I was pretty small, to be really honest. And having to navigate that with them in a way that I could be honest with my story and my own trauma. You know, today I could be like, yeah, my life's a shithole. But at that time, I couldn't be, could be as direct. You're absolutely right. We don't know what's going on with someone. So for me, maybe I looked culturally like fantastic, but my life was horrible. And that weight was actually a representation of suffering. So right now, I'm healthy, way healthier than I was then, but my body looks in a way that maybe is not culturally as attractive, or, you know, now these doctors are alarmed because I've crossed some arbitrary number. It's quite interesting, isn't it? And ironic. So we don't know. And it's just going back to this idea of making assumptions like, ah, you look so good, or ah, what's your secret? Like, their secret may be something really personal or really devastating.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if in your experience and also working with clients who have gone through similar experiences at the doctor's office, do you have any advice on how someone might look for a doctor that is going to treat them more fairly, or how they can enter an appointment and not have it be all about weight? And maybe you don't have an answer. This is something I'm still definitely working on figuring out answers to.
I wish I had one standard answer. So I'm going to own some serious privilege right now. I worked really hard. So I work at a practice, and there's three of us that specialize in eating disorders. And one of the first jobs I did was I spent a lot of time on the phone kind of screening doctors, because I knew I was not going to be able to do my job if I didn't have a place to send my clients. So part of my answer is that I have some doctors, actually they're nurse practitioners, who are just delightful. And so we kind of have providers, here's our safe people, go here. So part of it is taken care of for them. Here's people we recommend. Now, how I went about doing that was calling the office and just having a conversation with their nurse. Like, I needed to know if they took eating disorders. So that may not be applicable to everyone. But then, do you weigh people? Do people have the option of not being weighed at all? If they do, can you do blind weights? That's clearly really important. So I think that that's a starting point. That doesn't necessarily mean that they are, you know, weight neutral or health at every size. I think that that is in some cities an option where someone can find a truly health at every size provider, but not always. But you often can find a doctor that's willing to allow you to not be weighed or to do a blind weight. And that can be a starting point for some people. There's also, and we can link this up, there's some scripts. I've seen two that are coming to my mind that essentially empowers a client to either speak through it, or it's just in writing of how they want that medical appointment to go. And I think that can be really empowering to either role play in a session or just to walk that into the doctor's office and just kind of says, this is what I'm going to be doing in my time. And it will walk through like weight, do they want to be weighed, not weighed, in the way that they want their conversations to go about body. And I think it's just helpful to know that you don't have to be weighed. A lot of people don't realize that. Unless you're going to be having something to do with your medication changes, there's really no purpose in being weighed. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, that's all really helpful information. And I have seen the scripts that you're referring to in some shape or form. So I'll definitely link to that if people are wishing to use similar scripts or the forms to give to their providers or the nurse. And I was thinking too, something else that came up for me is I remember hearing not long ago someone say that if a doctor or a nurse practitioner or PA is refusing a test for you, so if they're not taking what you're talking about seriously and simply just prescribing weight loss, I've heard, and I've never personally tried this, so I can't vouch for it, but if you ask them to take note in the document that they refused to give you said test or whatever it may be, they're more likely to do it because they don't want to have to document that. Now, this has only been hearsay, but that could also be something worth noting as well.
Absolutely. Yes. And I don't think we talked about if someone feels empowered, you know, would you be giving this advice to a thin person? And part of the conversation of making it clear that you don't want to talk about nutrition, you know, if you already have a dietitian mm-hmm. on your team, or just drawing that line, like, I'm not here to talk about nutrition. So those can be some other tips.
Yeah. So thank you so much for coming on today. Do you have any final thoughts to wrap up this conversation about how a multitude of things, weight bias in our healthcare system, your personal experiences, anything that you'd like to end on?
Oh my goodness. Ooh, I feel like I have to give like a big speech. I don't know.
No pressure.
I don't know that I have any big speech. This is really cheesy, okay? But this takes me back to college, and it's just something that I don't think that I will forget. So Sarah Groves, some people may or may not know her, but it's this song. It was really moving to me. It was like a live concert. She's playing the piano. And the song is just called, I think it's called I Saw What I Saw. But I feel like that's where I'm at right now. And the lyrics that stand out in my mind is, I saw what I saw and I can't forget. I heard what I heard and I can't go back. Mm. And I think that is where I'm at as a human. And maybe those of us, whether we're thinking about health at every size, those of us who we are professionals thinking about people's stories and having that lens, like we have this knowledge, we've seen it, we've heard it. There's no going back.
Well, thank you so much for coming on today. And for people who don't already follow you on social media or are aware of the services that you provide, could you tell us a little bit about that?
100% with a full disclosure, I don't love social media. So I give myself a huge like, follow me if you want. But so it's just my name, Lori Brown, everything that I do. And I spell Lori, L-O-R-I. So on Instagram, it's at Lori Brown Nutrition. And my personal website is Lori Brown Nutrition. I work for Nashville Nutrition Partners. Just a beautiful, it's not a place that says they're health at every size. We are legit going upstream nutrition practice. So I'm really proud to be there. And that's where I spend my time in terms of the practice and what I do. Part of my self-care is actually not being on social media very often. So if people want to like chat with me, get to know me, I'm pretty old school. Wish I could have coffee with everybody. That's a little hard. So probably dropping me an email, LoriBrownNutrition@gmail.com, might be the most effective way to catch up with me. Something fun that I secretly hope to do. It's secret because it's a baby, but I just love the kind of peri-postmenopausal, like, oh gosh, Margot Main. So that is my grad school big project. So maybe keep your eyes open on my non-thesis, and let's see if anything fun comes out of that if I make it through.
Ooh, I'm intrigued. You'll have to let me know what you're working on, and I would be happy to spread the word. That's our show for today. Thank you so much for tuning in, and thank you to Anchor for again hosting my podcast. Be sure to download and subscribe this podcast on Apple or your favorite streaming device. If you're looking for ways to get started on your own journey towards food freedom, head over to my website at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/course to get started on my self-paced course. If you need more individualized help, I also offer virtual coaching, and you can get in touch with me at spillingthebeansnutrition.com/virtual-coaching. To get show notes from this episode, you can go to spillingthebeansnutrition.com/podcast. And of course, if you're not already following me on Instagram or Facebook, I'm at spillingthebeans_nutrition. Our album art was photographed by my very own little cousin, Brittany Preller, and our theme song was written by Daniel James O'Connor and is used under the Creative Commons license.